Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 45. Yuvamam Putra Bhavena Brahma Bhavena Chasakrit Chintayantau Rita Snehao Yasyete Mad Gatim Param Yudvam. Both of you, husband and wife, Mam unto me, Putra Bhavena, as your son, Brahma Bhavena, knowing that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Cha and Asakrit constantly Chindianto thinking like that Krita Snehao dealing with love and affection Yasyete shall both obtain Vakatim my supreme abode Param, which is transcendental, beyond this material world. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you'll achieve the highest perfection, returning home, back to Godhead. Purport. The instruction by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his father and mother, who are eternally connected with him, is especially intended for persons eager to return home, back to Godhead. One should never think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as an ordinary human being, as non-devotees do. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally appeared and left his instructions for the benefit of human society. Fools and rascals unfortunately think of him as an ordinary human being and twist the instructions of Bhagavad Gita for the satisfaction of their senses. Practically everyone commenting on Bhagavad Gita interprets it for its sense gratification. It has become especially fashionable for modern scholars and politicians to interpret Bhagavad Gita as it is, as if it were something fictitious. And by their wrong interpretations, they are spoiling their own careers and the careers of others. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is fighting against this principle of regarding Krishna as a fictitious person and of accepting that there was no battle of Kurukshetra, and that everything is symbolic, and that nothing in Bhagavad Gita is true. In any case, if one truly wants to be successful, one can do so by reading the text of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially stressed the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, Yari Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh. One wants to achieve the highest success in life, one must accept Bhagavad Gita as spoken by the Supreme Lord. By accepting Bhagavad Gita in this way, all of human society can become perfect and happy. So he noted that because Vasudeva and Devaki would be separated from Krishna, when he was carried to Gokula, the residence of Nanda Maharaj, the Lord personally instructed them that they should always think of him as their son and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will keep them in touch with him. After 11 years, the Lord would return to Mathura to be their son, and therefore there was no question of separation. So, the verse again. Yuvamam putra bhavena brahma bhavena sa cha sakrit chintayantau krita snehau yasyete madgatam gaparam. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead. Here it mentions that, generally speaking, people don't accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and indeed, they don't really even know who God might even be, what to speak of the fact that Krishna might be that person. Parasara Muni has explained that God, or the Supreme Bhagavan, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashastriyaha Jnana Vairagyas Chainam Shana Bhagahi Tinganaha. The God is that person who has unlimited opulence, Bhagavan. Bhag means opulence and va means possess, just like Jnanavan. Jnana means knowledge, and one who possesses knowledge is said to be Jnanavan. So what does it mean to be God and possess all opulence? There must be unlimited beauty. There must be unlimited strength, unlimited knowledge, unlimited renunciation, unlimited fame, and unlimited wealth. Otherwise, how can one claim to be God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unless one has all these opulences to an unlimited degree? If someone has more intelligence than Krishna has, then how can Krishna be God? That the person has more intelligence than Krishna must be God. Now, in any case, if Krishna is God and he has unlimited intelligence, all his instructions are perfect. Now, we don't know that because we don't really even know who we are, what to speak of whether Krishna is God or not. If we don't even, if we're not even aware of our own selves, then how can we be aware of the Supreme Self? We're infinitesimal. We're not even aware of something that's infinitesimal. So how can we be aware of someone who's unlimited? Therefore, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Prabhupada advises us to at least theoretically accept that Krishna might be God. And then we can see if we apply his instructions, what experience we get. Now, if we don't believe he's God, then there's no reason to read Bhagavad Gita. Any special reason. One can read it just to find out what other speculators think. But if we actually accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we should read it in order to find out what he wants us to do. After all, if someone knows everything, then it's a good idea to follow his instructions. If someone tells you that if you take your next step, you're going to foot who's going to land on a landmine, and if he knows everything, you might be careful about where you take your next foot step. And if you don't believe him, you take your next foot step and you blow up. Well, at least you found out he was right. Therefore, at least theoretically, we should accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. And in that spirit, we should read Bhagavad Gita and try to find out something that he's telling us to do that's practical in our lives, that we can apply within our lives, and therefore find out whether or not what he's saying is accurate. And at the same time, we should know what the goal is. In other words, Krishna says, the goal is to know him. Now, if we think there's some other goal which is more important than to meet the Supreme Person, a person who has unlimited beauty and strength and knowledge, fame, renunciation and wealth, then the question is, what could be more important? For seeing someone who has infinitesimal beauty, will spend so much money on magazines and movies and going to shows, we'll spend so much time as fans of people who are strong, or are able or talented in so many different ways. But if we can meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has all these qualities that we perceive, but to an unlimited degree, and we think something's more important, it's not very intelligent. It's like going to a multi-billionaire and asking them for a donation of 50 cents. If you go to a multi-billionaire and ask for donations, you'd ask for a big donation. Why ask for a small one? And if Krishna is the one who's giving us everything, and we find out, and we accept that, and at least try it out, then we should ask for something important, like to meet him. Because after all, according to Krishna, as we surrender, he awards us. So if we completely surrender, then he gives him very self. And what could you better than unlimited wealth yourself? It's one thing if Krishna is God and he has unlimited wealth, but if you become his devotee and he surrenders to you, he reciprocates, then you get unlimited wealth also. So if you're looking for some wealth, people are so infatuated, if they can get $1 million, what happens to 100 trillion, trillion, trillion dollars? All the wealth in all the universes. Because we don't need all the wealth in all the universes, because we can only eat a couple of chapatis a day anyhow. But in any case, if we're looking for Aishwarya, for opulence, then Krishna has all opulence. And if one surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates and gives his very self to the devotee. Now the problem is we don't accept Krishna as God, but at least we should accept something that he says. Prabhupada writes in the last part of the Nectar of Instruction, verse 5, by rendering transcendental service to Krishna, one automatically, this is actually from the verse, one becomes qualified as a devotee on the elementary platform, the intermediate platform, and the highest platform of devotional service according to the development of Ishvara. So really it depends upon how much instructions of Krishna we're accepting, how much of this philosophy we accept, because first we have to find out what is the philosophy before we can accept it. And we have to experience it. Bhagavad Gita is not meant to accept things blindly, but by experience, to gain the experience, the realization, so that it automatically becomes clear. As Krishna says, like the sun lights up everything in the daytime. When the sun comes up in the morning, no one has to prove to us that the sun exists. If one's eyes are open, one can see the sun. Because if one chooses to keep his eyes closed and deny the existence of the sun, people who have eyes open are not going to take them very seriously. And therefore, everything depends upon our hearing the instructions of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna, trying to remember them, because we can't do anything with something we can't remember. If we don't remember something, it's as good as not ever hearing it, practically speaking. It's only what we can remember and actually put into practice that has any possibility of having any effect in our lives. If you eat 5 tons of food like an elephant, but you don't assimilate any of the food, then what is the value of eating 5 tons of food? Prabhupada said the elephant eats that much food and it passes that much stool. It didn't really gain anything. So unless we hear and we capture something to digest and assimilate, then it's almost like not hearing at all. And therefore it says, Shara Shabde Vishvasakare Srudridani Chai Krishna Bhakti Kaila Sarvakarma Kritahai. By rendering transcendental service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This confident, firm faith, favorable to the discharge of devotional service, is called Shraddha. Shraddha, faith in Krishna, is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Faith means strong faith. The words of Bhagavad Gita are authoritative instructions for faithful men. And whatever Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is to be accepted as it is without interpretation. That was the way Arjuna accepted Bhagavad Gita. After hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna told Krishna, Sarvam etadrita manye yanmad vadasi keshava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. So it's not that we have to blindly accept what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, but we should at least try to understand what's practical in our lives and then apply it. And if it doesn't work, then we can read some other book. And if it doesn't work, then we should try to find out what further instructions Krishna is going to give me in Bhagavad Gita to help me come, at least if my goal is to become Krishna conscious, to realize the Supreme, then Bhagavad Gita has some meaning. If I have some other goal other than to realize Krishna, then there's no use of reading Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is only meant for those who are devotees trying to reach Krishna. Otherwise, there's no other purpose. And if Krishna is God, at least theoretically, and worthy of being obtained, then we should, he's also is worthy to try out his instructions. Because unless one follows Krishna's instructions, there's no sense, there's no possibility of realizing Krishna. If he's God, there's no other way of obtaining him than to follow his instructions. So if we don't really want to reach Krishna, we don't really believe Krishna exists, even on faith, then there's no sense following his instructions, because we don't believe that they're going to, we don't even know what the goal is. And if the goal is to obtain Krishna, and we don't want to follow his instructions, then it's ludicrous. If he's actually God, then how, by following, we don't want to follow his instructions, how else are we going to attain him? We can't force him to reveal himself to us if he's actually God. And if we can force him to reveal himself to us, then how could he be God? That means we must be God. We're controlling God by force. In any case, Krishna has so many instructions in Bhagavad Gita, beginning with we're not this body, karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, bhakti yoga. So many different levels of consciousness of raising it. So we have to judge where we're, what our level of consciousness is. Have I even accepted the fact that I should do things without attachment as a matter of duty? What to speak of realizing Krishna? Do I actually understand the problem of being attached to the material world and being attached to doing whatever I want or expecting some return for what I'm doing? After all, we're dealing in a very temporary world where things are constantly changing, and because they're constantly changing, therefore hankering for something that's temporary is not a very good idea. Because the very hankering is distressful. And when we get what we were hankering for, then we'll be in distress trying to keep it. If you have $1 million, the question is, where are you keeping it and how safe it is? And how much you have to make plans for it and worry about it? And what good is $1 million if you're going to spend it just to keep $1 million, if you're going to save it? And then when you get it, eventually either one has to disappear themselves, or the money will disappear, and then one will lament that I had $1 million, it disappeared. Now I'm so sad. But if you never had $1 million, you wouldn't have anything to be sad about, so you'd be happy. So if the goal of $1 million is to make you happy, but if it made you sad, then what's the sense of having $1 million? And if by not having it you're happy, then it's good not to have it. In other words, as long as we think that happiness will be found in the material world by accumulation of wealth or the results of our activities, we're bound to be disappointed because we'll have to struggle to get some result. And when we get it, inevitably we have to lose it one way or another. and therefore the struggle and the loss are both the causes of distress and misery and sadness. Therefore, even Krishna's beginning instruction to perform one's activities as a matter of duty, if we don't accept that, then what is the sense of anything else? If we don't even accept that minimum amount of knowledge and renunciation, then how are we going to realize Krishna? How are we going to realize that Krishna is God controlling everything if we won't even give up our control over our pencil? Or something bigger than a pencil, if we are attached. Now, of course, it's not that we're completely detached from everything. If we're attached to Krishna and his instructions, we have to be attached to something. So we hanker for Krishna. That's the proper use of hankering. And we lament the fact that we don't have Krishna. That's the proper use of lamentation. Everything else is insignificant. So, Prabhupada writes, this is the correct way of understanding Bhagavad Gita, and it's called Shraddha. It is not that one accepts one portion of Bhagavad Gita according to his own whimsical interpretations, and then rejects another portion. This is not Shraddha. Shraddha means accepting the instructions of Bhagavad Gita in their totality, especially the last instruction, Sarva Dharma Prachaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Bhagavad Gita 18:66. When one becomes completely faithful in regard to this instruction, one's strong faith becomes the basis of advancing in spiritual life. So we're trying to acquire that strong faith, but we can have it immediately, not by realization, which is really strong faith. The perfection is when we meet Krishna, but by just not rejecting anything Krishna says. Not blindly accepting it, nor blindly rejecting it, but trying to apply it in a very practical way. Just to accept for a moment that Krishna might be God, and therefore everything here belongs to him, and then we can try to utilize something in his service according to the directions of his book, Bhagavad Gita, as well as under the guidance of his representative or representatives. Then we can see if Krishna reciprocates or not. If he doesn't reciprocate, then maybe he's not God. And if we never try it out, we never really take it seriously. We have so many other ideas. Some parts of Bhagavad Gita we accept, some parts we don't accept, some parts of Srimad Bhagavatam we accept, some we don't accept. Then why should Krishna reveal himself to us and spoil our stubborn obstinacy to not even theoretically accept it might be true? If we already are convinced it's not true, why would Krishna try to change our conviction that it is true? He may be God, but he doesn't interfere with our minute independence to deny that he's God. And any time we subtly or grossly reject his instructions, or say, well, it's not so important, so I'm following so many other things. Why do I care about that? Why should anyone care? No one else is following it. Why should I follow it? Why blaming me? Look at everyone else, what they're doing. They're all going to hell, so why should I bother? I'll go to hell with them. It's easy. I'll have some good company. Who cares about Krishna? It's not worth the sacrifice. No one cares about Krishna. Why should I care about Krishna? I may have supposedly have an eternal relationship with him, but I don't care. Who cares? I have a happy relationship. As that famous story, one man is telling another man that if you keep on drinking, then you're going to go to hell. So the man says, well, my mother drinks. Well, she's going to go to hell. And my father also drinks. Well, he's also going to go to hell. Oh, but my brothers and sisters, they are all drinking. So they're all going to hell. But my friends, they drink. Well, they're going to hell too. So the conclusion is, the person who has all these friends and relatives who are going to hell, he said, well, if all my friends and relatives are in hell, then hell is heaven for me. Therefore, if we follow what everyone else is doing, rather than following what the acharyas are doing, what the actually realized devotees are doing, then of course we'll get whatever everyone else is doing. We'll get the result of what they're doing. If you feel comfortable following people who are less, who are blind, andaya tandira pugiyamana stepisha tantra urudami bara, then the same ditch that they fall into will accompany them, and we can be happy together falling into the same ditch and talk about how we broke our legs together. Therefore, whether Krishna is God or not, that's meant to be experienced or discovered, and there's a process available to do that, and what could be a greater goal or purpose than to realize the Supreme Person and our relationship with Him. So that's available in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and we should try. If it's the whole idea of the Krishna consciousness movement is to offer people an opportunity to experience Krishna by understanding Him properly from the right source and applying His instructions within one's life, and therefore see what the result would be and judge for oneself. Susukam Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Susukam Kartum Avyam Pravakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyam Pravakshavagamam. It gives one direct perception within self by realization. So that's what we're looking for, our own personal realizations, not just blind following or sentimental. It should be clear experience by submission, service, and inquiry. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You were talking about this Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. What is the mentality in Ashtanga Yoga and what can we learn?
Ashtanga Yoga? No one's practicing Sangha Yoga nowadays. Sangha Yoga means by the practice of Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dhyana, Dhyana, and Samadhi, one is meditating upon the personality of Godhead, his super soul within the heart. That's the Sangha Yoga. After one goes through the process of non-attachment through Karma Yoga, then one becomes receptive to hearing reality about reality, and practicing it through austerity and control of the mind and senses in Jnana Yoga. And when one can control one's mind and senses and become aloof from sense gratification, one can meditate upon the super soul within the heart. That's called Ashtanga Yoga. And then when one realizes how nice the super soul is, one can actually become inspired to render him some service, at least appreciate him. That's called Bhakti Yoga. Anything else? Vala Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.